Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. And every week, we take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who are they? What made them so notorious? How did the internet or the algorithm choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, guys. Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Last time on Ear Witness.
She was a very credible witness. We believed her. Obviously, we believed her because we convicted him, and it was on her testimony.
The only evidence supposedly they had against him was this ear witness who had never heard him speak before, who had no idea who he was.
That is extremely strong evidence if it's believed. Of course, the question becomes, do you believe that evidence? Well, to believe that evidence, you have to believe Ms. Ellison.
And so we're trying to get information on her. Her name's Violet Ellison.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have an opinion about her or have any information that you could give us about her?
I know she's very vindictive. She's a very messy lady. Very messy.
But I can tell you one thing about my grandma. That's a true scam artist. I hate to say it. I know that's my grandma, but that's a true scam artist there.
And I hate that this man could be innocent and for $5,000. He's on death row $5,000.
Near the intersection of Rosa Parks Avenue and Liberty Street in Montgomery, Alabama, is a tiny red brick church. Outside St. Peter AME, a large white banner is stretched 25 feet across the church's front lawn. The words, "It's not too late to fix this mistake," are written across the banner in black and red letters. The mistake is to Forrest Johnson's conviction. The banner was created by an organization called Greater Birmingham Ministries. This year, it has traveled to 8 different churches across Alabama to help raise awareness about DeForest's case. Awareness that is growing.
Holy cow!
It's just ridiculous.
This case is shameful.
My name is Lindsay Boney. I'm a lawyer at the law firm Bradley Arant Bolt Cummings. When I think about this case, it's mind-blowing to me.
My name is Carla Crowder. I'm a lawyer and executive director at Alabama Appleseed Center for Law and Justice. This case is stunning, and this case is heartbreaking.
My name is Nick Gady. I have been an active lawyer in Birmingham since 1964. We can do better, and we need to do better.
lots of people have known for a very long time that this man is innocent, and he's still on death row. Why does it take 25 years?
These are just a few in the chorus of powerful voices calling on the state to fix this. Lawyers from all sides of the political spectrum are lending their support, along with former prosecutors and judges, as well as Alabama churches and faith leaders, like Sister Helen Prejean.
Please God, with these efforts and people hearing this about Tuforest, his life will be saved.
Even death penalty supporter Bill Baxley, Alabama's former attorney general, has joined the fight.
I will add my voice or anything I can do, because this is a situation that shouldn't be allowed to exist another minute.
When Baxley reviewed Tuforest's case, he was so outraged, he wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post that said an innocent man is trapped on Alabama's death row.
The only thing that I can see as to why this kind of thing happened was the victim was a law enforcement officer.
Tuforest Johnson now has unprecedented support. And it's not just from all these people who believe he's innocent. The current district attorney of Jefferson County, along with the original prosecutor who sent him to death row, both now say Tuforest Johnson deserves a new trial. So why is the state of Alabama still trying to kill him? I'm Beth Shelburne. This is Ear Witness, Chapter 8, Bondage to the Law.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus, where every week I take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who were they? What made them so notorious? Why did the internet choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? I'll be talking to internet historians, experts, and yes, the main characters themselves to get a fuller picture. Because I think that even outside individual experiences, a character of the day tells us something about how the internet worked at that time and how the attention economy developed into the freaky three-headed dragon it is today. Together, we probably won't be able to properly log out, but we can take a walk down scary internet memory lane and see one day a little more clearly. Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey.
Hey.
What's going on?
How are you?
I'm all right. You doing okay?
I'm good, yeah.
Good. Good to see you.
I'm meeting with District Attorney Danny Carr, but not at his office in the courthouse. We're at the barber shop he owns in Birmingham's Inslee community, where he grew up.
I'm from the Inslee community where we are today. I matriculated through the Birmingham City School System.
The barber shop is old school. Tile floors, posters of hairstyles on the walls, and a sign advertising $10 haircuts.
Can you talk while he's buzzing?
Oh, yeah.
I don't normally interview prosecutors while they're getting a haircut, but Danny Carr is a busy man. In 2018, when he was elected District Attorney of Jefferson County, he became the first Black man to hold the position. He now runs the same office that argued for DeForest Johnson to be sentenced to death for Deputy Bill Hardy's murder. But Danny Carr wasn't part of DeForest's prosecution. He wasn't even a lawyer yet when it happened. Danny Carr is different from other DAs in a number of ways. He ran as a change maker. He put together the first conviction review unit in Jefferson County. The unit's job is to review cases where the DA's office might have made some mistakes. He's one of only three Black DAs among the 42 across Alabama. He grew up in a community that's been impacted by crime and mass incarceration. His family has also been a victim of violence. The year he was hired as a young prosecutor, Danny's younger brother Jackson was murdered. Danny named his barbershop D and J in his brother's memory. D for Danny, J for Jackson.
Can you kind of walk me through your involvement in the DeForest Johnson case? When did you first become aware of it?
I became aware of it when I was an assistant DA. Conversations about it. But I didn't know truly the facts of it. I just overheard different conversations, varying opinions about it. And then what happened?
Once Danny was elected as DA, he started hearing more about DeForest's case as a possible wrongful conviction. And the year after Danny was elected, DeForest's case was back in court. This was the hearing I covered the first time I reported on DeForest's case, where his attorneys argued that Violet Ellison testified in pursuit of the reward money and the state hid it. I saw Danny Carr at the hearing, but he told me he wasn't ready yet to comment on the case.
I didn't know, you know, who was telling the truth, who, what was right, what was wrong. I just listened. And it was apparent that if some of that stuff was true, then it was concerning.
So after the hearing, Danny decided to conduct a full review of DeForest's conviction. For 9 months, he read through the trial transcripts, as well as the documents that prosecutors had claimed were misfiled. He was troubled by the $5,000 reward payment given to Violet Ellison that the jury didn't even know was a possibility.
Well, if that information was not disclosed, then the process was flawed. And if the process was flawed, then the end result is not truly the end result. Because to get to that end result, the process has to be fair.
Danny also talked to people involved, including alibi witnesses. But perhaps the most significant person Danny Carr consulted, the original prosecutor, Jeff Wallace, the same prosecutor who asked two juries to sentence DeForest to death. It turns out Jeff Wallace had his own questions about the credibility of his star witness, Violet Ellison, going back 15 years.
I observed something that triggered in my mind the need to report this to the defense. I don't know if you know about that or not.
What did you observe?
After the conviction and sentence of...
Several years after DeForest was convicted, Jeff said he was passing through a courtroom during a trial of a drug dealer. Jeff Wallace wasn't prosecuting the case. He just needed to ask the bailiff a question.
And as I left the bailiff station, which of course is in the front of the courtroom, I'm walking out and happened to notice in the spectators area on the front row, the defendant's wife being consoled by our chief witness in the Johnson case.
In my Violet Ellison.
Ms. Ellison, that's right. In my mind, that conduct was inconsistent with the picture that I had of Ms. Ellison at the time of trial. She seemed to me to be only a mother trying to do the best thing for her daughter and happened to overhear a telephone conversation the notes that she made of that telephone conversation became important in the trial of Mr. Johnson, as you know. So her credibility as the citizen she was, I think was important because she was the case. She is the case.
To be clear, I'm not sure what consoling a suspected drug dealer's wife has to do with Violet Ellison's credibility in DeForest's case. But Jeff said it left him with an unsettling impression about his star witness, a realization that there were things about her he didn't know.
So seeing her being so close to the wife of a man that everybody knew was a major drug dealer disturbed that image in my mind. I thought, well, I'm going to report that to the other side, to the defense.
And he did. In 2007, Jeff Wallace talked to DeForest's legal team about what he saw. They looked into the information, but so far, it hasn't led to any new legal claims for DeForest. Fast forward 13 years, and Danny Carr calls on Jeff Wallace to talk about the conviction of DeForest Johnson. Jeff shares his concerns about Violet Ellison's credibility, and then he does something that makes a major impression on Danny. Jeff Wallace says he believes DeForest should be granted a new trial. This incredible development pushes Danny to take public action.
Your job is not to get convictions. Your job is to seek the truth.
But Danny has one more important call to make to Deputy Bill Hardy's family. He braces himself. It's never easy for a prosecutor to talk to a victim's family about unsettling the conviction and their loved one's murder. But he picks up the phone and calls Deputy Hardy's widow, Patricia Diane Hardy.
And when I called her, she said, look, she said, I know your mom, I know you, been knowing you since you was a little boy. She said, you know, I trust you, and whatever decision you make, I'm fine with it, but I trust you. And you can't get any better than that.
Yeah.
And that's what you want from people, period.
And then Danny Carr does something extraordinary, something that almost never happens. He files a brief with the Jefferson County Court, writing that his duty to seek justice requires intervention in the case of DeForest Johnson. He asks Judge Pulliam to throw out DeForest's conviction and order a new trial. And he includes that the original prosecutor, Jeff Wallace, supports this call for a new trial. Of all the capital murder cases that you've looked at, you've tried, you've been familiar with as DA, how do you see this case? How would you describe it in the context of all the cases you've seen?
I think it's the worst case.
I spoke with Jeff Wallace about his support for a new trial. I think you joining the district attorney is a powerful statement from a former prosecutor in a capital case. I can't remember in my reporting of over 20 years ever seeing that or hearing about it.
Oh, I'm sure I'm not the first.
Jeff seemed to want to downplay the significance of his support for a new trial, but this is seriously rare. I looked for other cases like this and reached out to experts who study wrongful convictions. Nobody could remember a death penalty case in any state where the original trial prosecutor called for a new trial. I interviewed Jeff Wallace three different times with 4 hours of on-the-record conversations. Jeff was accessible and generous with his time, but he was also careful with his words.
I still am personally satisfied that the evidence showed DeForest Johnson to be guilty. Of course, my opinion is based in large part on the testimony of the Violet Ellison that I saw at trial. Mm-hmm. But in my opinion, there's a reason to look at it again.
This is what I mean by careful. He says the evidence at trial showed DeForest to be guilty based on Violet Ellison's testimony. But he also says the concern he had about Violet Ellison's credibility is why he supports the call for a new trial. After my first conversation with Jeff Wallace in 2021, I did a lot more investigating into Violet Ellison. I asked to speak with Jeff again because I wanted to share everything that I learned. We also found that in addition to being a witness in this case, Violet Ellison has been a witness in 4 other criminal cases in Jefferson County.
After the Johnson case?
Before, during, and after. I tell Jeff about the other cases where Violet Ellison was a witness for the state and that the defense accused her of lying to police and under oath. He listens politely. But what I really want is for Jeff Wallace to hear some clips of what people are saying about Violet Ellison, the star witness he put on the stand, the same witness he now has questions about. Do you have any interest in listening to what we found?
No.
You don't? I find that, like, astonishing. I don't know. Can you explain why you don't want to hear what we found?
I'm not the prosecuting attorney in the case. Or, for that matter, the defending attorney. Of course, I couldn't be, but...
Yeah, but Jeff, I mean, you tried this case and you asked the jury to sentence him to death and he's on death row.
That was the state of the evidence when I was standing in the courtroom.
The evidence hasn't changed in your mind after what we've told you?
No, I think the evidence has changed, but it's no longer my responsibility.
In a way, he's right. The responsibility of all death row cases after conviction falls to Alabama's Attorney General, an elected position that represents the entire state, unlike district attorneys who represent a single county. The current Attorney General in Alabama is Steve Marshall. He could listen to Danny Carr and Jeff Wallace and allow a new trial for DeForest Johnson. But instead, the AG's office calls this a subjective opinion that does not raise an issue of extraordinary public importance or any compelling circumstances. Marshall's office is still actively and aggressively fighting to Forrest's appeals and seeking his execution. These conflicting positions make me think of those big metal grain silos that you see in the Midwest, with each party in our criminal justice system in its own silo, isolated from the opposing view, trapped in their official position. I talk with Jeff Wallace about this dynamic. It does seem like there are a lot of silos that people are in the system, and they stay in those silos. Does that make sense?
It does. And if a silo is a thing that you cannot climb out of, then that's where I am. I've told you what I think. If it were legal and it were presented to me, would you or would you not order a new trial, Mr. Wallace? I would sign it today and order a new trial. But the thing you're calling a silo, my silo is a retired former prosecutor who happened to have been in charge of this case at one time.
So why can't you climb out of the silo?
What silo would I climb into? I can't be an appellate judge. I can't be the defendant's attorney. I can't be a juror. Can't be the defendant.
What if we just all climb out of our silos and nobody's in a silo anymore? If we're all just kind of out in the open?
Well, the law has set up these silos. And the law is still in effect.
Yeah, there's this quote on the outside of the Jefferson County Courthouse that
we are in bondage to the law in order that we may be free.
That's it. We are in bondage to the law in order that we may be free. It's a quote from Roman philosopher Cicero. Why do we have to be in bondage to something to be free?
Either we have laws or we don't. Which way do you want it?
I guess one thing that we've been thinking about is, like, what is the cost of that bondage? And is it that sometimes you end up with situations like this?
I sure hope not. But the law is the law. No one is going to present me that piece of paper and ask me whether I would order a new trial. I'm in bondage to the law.
You may see Jeff Wallace's support for a new trial as a half measure. He could call the case an injustice and take more accountability for his role in DeForest's conviction. But a trial prosecutor saying anything that calls a conviction into question is exceptional. There's no incentive for Jeff Wallace to say a word, no framework for prosecutors to voice doubt, or space for regrets to count. And yet, Jeff Wallace still chose to speak up when he didn't have to say anything at all. In this project, we tried to answer the question of how an innocent man ended up on death row. We laid bare an investigation that was rushed to conclusion by tunnel vision and pressure to convict someone, anyone, for the murder of a deputy sheriff. This case shows us how young, marginalized people like Yolanda Chambers can be exploited, and how money is wielded as an incentive for vulnerable people to become ensnared with law enforcement. It also demonstrates the terrible consequences for people who can't afford to pay for the best criminal defense. So far, the courts have said there was nothing illegal about what the state did, presenting five different theories about who committed the murder and paying the key witness behind closed doors, only admitting to this payment 17 years later. This is how our system works. According to the courts that have examined DeForest Johnson's conviction, it's not broken. It's working exactly as designed.
They say that you're presumed innocent until proven guilty, and that is the law.
Former Attorney General Bill Baxley.
But deep down, people don't believe somebody's innocent until they're proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. They think that they had to do something or they wouldn't have been arrested and wouldn't have been indicted and wouldn't be there.
Not only do they presume people guilty, but they look at these people as expendable.
Richard Jaffe, who represented Ardragus Ford.
When the system failed DeForest Johnson, it betrayed all of us. DeForest Johnson is as innocent as anyone could possibly be. Deputy Hardy would never want the wrong person to be convicted for his murder.
After Jaffe's client, Ardragus Ford, was acquitted, he lived a quiet life, mostly in Atlanta. His mother, Joyce Ford, said DeForest's conviction weighed on her son.
He never talked about it. He was strong. He never talked about it. But, you know, he would get quiet at times. He would be rolling in a wheelchair, go sit quiet with his head down. You know, it took him a while to try to overcome it. You never overcome it, but so, you know, he had his days. You know, through it all, through the grace of God, it was a long, hard battle, but I would never wish that on a mother.
Ardragus died from health issues in 2021. His mom, Joyce Ford, died less than a year after we recorded this interview. I've been reporting on DeForest's case since 2019. I've interviewed dozens of people, but the one person I'd still most like to talk to is the very person I can't reach. Alabama's prison system doesn't allow people on death row to talk to journalists. DeForest's family has shared dozens of digital photos with me that I've kept in a folder on my laptop. There's DeForest as a baby wearing a tiny suit, as a skinny kid wearing a bow tie, and so many photos from visits at Holman Prison with his arms around his family. And I know the closest I can get to him is through the people he loves the most, his kids.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus, where every week I take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who were they? What made them so notorious? Why did the internet choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? I'll be talking to internet historians, experts, and yes, the main characters themselves to get a fuller picture. Because I think that even outside individual experiences, a character of the day tells us something about how the internet worked at that time and how the attention economy developed into the freaky three-headed dragon it is today. Together, we probably won't be able to properly log out, but we can take a walk down scary internet memory lane and see one day a little more clearly. Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi, guys. Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Writing about your dad's case for about 2 years now. So I'm so happy to finally see y'all and meet y'all and get to hang out with you, especially
in October of 2021, I asked DeForest's kids if we could all get together and talk. So we meet up on a Saturday afternoon at his oldest daughter, Shanae Poole's place. It's a light-filled condo in downtown Birmingham. Her golden doodle, named Banks, meanders around, wagging his tail at everyone. And his kids immediately start to share memories of their dad.
I remember going and realizing how short he was, though. He's so short when we took a picture on side of each other.
Yes.
He's so short.
Y'all, Maurice. You like tower over daddy. And I'm his same height.
I'm Shanae Poole. I am the oldest daughter of DeForest.
Shanae has his smile.
I'm Maurice Myers, and I'm the fourth oldest of DeForest.
His son, Maurice Myers, has his eyes and nose.
Well, I'm Tremaine Perry. I'm the oldest cub.
His oldest child, Tremaine Perry, has his voice and laugh.
And I'm Akiria Lala, and I'm the baby cub.
And Akiria, who goes by Muffin, his youngest, looks like she could be a twin to DeForest in his younger years. DeForest has one other son named Robbie Foster, but he was unable to join us for this gathering because he was living in Colorado at the time. He also looks like his father's twin. An inside joke is these siblings all share a common attribute from their dad.
My head, man, we all got these big heads, if you haven't noticed.
It's the forehead.
That's what's really big, it's the forehead. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He blessed us all with that.
I know.
That's why I grew my hair. So I know I was the oldest, so I saw maybe a lot more than they did, you know what I mean? But I knew what was going on, like, when I stopped seeing them, you know what I'm saying? Because they told me, like, right off the bat.
So how old were you when he...
Probably about 6 or 7.
Okay, so you were This is Tremaine, the oldest cub.
I was getting ready to ask my mom to take me to my pop's house. Like, I want to go with my daddy this weekend. And she's like, you won't be able to go this weekend because he's not going to be there. So I'm like, what you mean? Well, yeah, I wait on him to come back. She's like, no, it might be a minute before he come back. And that's when I ended up calling my grandma, and she just let me know what was going on just right then. And that kid kind of killed my spirit, you know what I'm saying? I'm thinking, like, if he ain't did nothing wrong, then why he gone? I could never get an answer for that. Nobody could ever answer that, you know what I'm saying? So just knowing that this man is sitting behind bars 20-plus years for something that he didn't do, like, that's heartbreaking.
Yeah, I mean,
you ought to think about how life would be if it hadn't happened, if things could be reversed. You think about a lot of stuff, but you can never get that, you know what I'm saying?
Shanae also remembers trying to put the pieces together about why she had to go to the prison to see her dad.
So I'm home with my mom, and then I go visit my dad. But I didn't realize that wasn't normal until we get into grade school and I see children with their two parents home. And so now I'm like, okay, this is not adding up. Something is not right. So, you know, help me understand what's happening. And then it's like, okay, well, he's away, but he's innocent. So what does innocent mean? I'm a kid. I don't understand what that means. He's there for something that he didn't do. Okay, well, why can't he just come home then? And so then I begin to get frustrated with him. Because I'm like, okay, well, if you didn't do it, then you could just come home. But clearly, it doesn't work that way. And then as I got older...
Even though their father wasn't at home, DeForest's kids didn't stop seeing him. They would get in the car with their grandmother, Donna, DeForest's mother, to make the 210-mile drive from Birmingham to Holman Prison, 3 hours each way.
I just remember always riding
that long ride.
And I was so young, and I was like, oh my, this is the longest car ride.
It's almost like you're driving to Florida going down there. It's in the middle of nowhere. It's no road like to lead to anywhere out there.
We
took those trips.
In Alabama, visits with men on death row are done in the visiting yard, the same area DeForest met with his attorney, Ty. It's called the yard, but it's indoors, like a big cafeteria lined with vending machines.
And of course, Grandma. So what I remember is quarters. Grandma used to have a sack.
Ooh. Yeah.
Oh,
full of
quarters.
A sack of quarters.
The freezer bags you use.
Yeah, the Ziploc
bags. We had those full of quarters and nickels. All the change we can get.
But before they got into the prison to see their dad, with the big bag of quarters so everyone could get their favorite snacks and candy from the prison yard vending machines, DeForest's kids had to go through prison security, where guards searched them and patted them down.
Thinking back on it, Muffin, I didn't really think about this until now, just kind of how violating it kind of was with them, because they had to search us, like, the same way.
Very violent. Yeah. I was like, I didn't even want to go back.
Searching you like you finna go in.
Yeah, and we were children.
Basically touching all of you, and I was just like, oh, this is a little weird. I'm not comfortable with you touching me. I mean, I'm just a kid. I'm not bringing nothing in here, so it was just real violating. I was like, I really don't want to come back, but I want to so I can see my dad. I just don't want you to touch me, but...
And we couldn't, you know, touch him whenever we were in there. So, of course, you know, you want to sit on your dad's lap. You want to lay on him and hug on him, and you can't do that. You have to keep your distance from each other. And like Tremaine said, there's never enough time. It always seems like it's just, we just got here. And you got to turn back around and get on the road trip again.
The visits were just a few hours, once a month at most. But it's where and how they got to know their father. Their relationships with their father are marked by both his absence and his presence. They admire his strength, the way he loves to hear about their lives when they talk on the phone, and how he never makes them feel like their problems are small.
When he calls you and you just want to talk about the good things, mm-hmm. and he's lived this life too, so he's all right, so now what's really going on? Like, I can hear it in your voice. Okay, princess, yeah. something not right. And I never like to tell him anything bad because there's nothing that he could do, but he's like, this is my way of being a father to you. This is how I can parent you, so allow me to do that. And then you feel so much better after you talk to him about it.
Because
he's going to make you laugh.
He's going to make you laugh.
He'll keep you laughing, I promise.
I'll be like, okay, I'm not mad anymore.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Right. And then it's hard to be mad. You know, it is hard to be angry or mad or kind of self-sulk because...
And you think about his situation.
Right. Yeah. And he always asks, so what'd you eat? I never want to tell him what I ate for dinner. Never. Because it's just...
I don't either.
I hate telling him.
I know he can't eat the same, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But he wants to know what you ate.
He wants to know. Or he wants, like, what we did today, like... If he would be on the phone with Tremaine and Maurice, he'd be like, yeah, I talked to Tremaine and Maurice the other day, and they were out somewhere. But he won't say they were. He'd be like, we were. Yeah. So, like, he's living through my brothers. Like, whatever they do, he thinks, like, he's out with them. Yeah. We're human bodies. Like, we have been affected. These are men that missed out on their father raising them. He's missed the birth of multiple grandchildren. He's missed milestones, us completing college and getting our first big girl jobs and purchasing our first homes. Like, these are really important things that he has missed out on. And so you have space and you have time between all of us that we literally cannot get back. Like, there's nothing that we could do about it. And so at the least that you could do is be accountable for what was done. And I think that that's all we're asking for. At this point, we're not trying to point the finger at anybody. We want true justice to be served, and we just want him to come home and for there to be some type of accountability held. And it's frustrating, it's disheartening, but it's like, well, we just got to keep fighting because we got to fight for daddy, we got to fight to get daddy home. I think we've bypassed the point of pointing the finger, and, you know, we're still hurting, we're still angry, we're still confused, upset, we have a lot of emotions, but we just want him to come home.
Why is Taforest Johnson still on Alabama's death row? Why is he still locked in a cell when so many people, including the prosecutor who argued to put him there, are calling for a new trial? In early October 2023, the United States Supreme Court announced it would not review Taforest Johnson's case. But Taforest's legal team continues to fight for him. They have appeals pending in both state and federal courts. This is where we find ourselves, unable to tell you how this story ends. I plan to stay here with Taforest, his family, his children, his lawyers, and everyone else who believes in him. We'll continue to hold him in the light of truth.
This is a free call from
Taforest Johnson,
an incarcerated individual at Alabama Department of Corrections. This call is not private. It will be recorded and may be monitored. You may start the conversation now.
Hey, Daddy.
Hey, Princess.
Hi. What you doing?
I'm good. How was your day?
It was good. Long today. Still trying to get used to Dallas and the territory, but it's been good.
Taforest calls his family from prison whenever he can. But his oldest daughter, Shanae, also keeps his cards and letters in a K-Swiss shoebox under her bed.
If I had to describe this card, there is a beehive on the front with a few bees buzzing around. And it's dated January the 5th, 2003.
Like all the people who love Taforest Johnson, his 5 kids and 15 grandkids, his mother Donna, his aunts, uncles, and cousins, they read the words he sent them over the years when they need to hold him close.
It reads, "I love you and can't wait to see you and hold you in my arms again. You, underlined, are the reason Daddy has a spirit to get up every day and has hope that there will be a better day up ahead for me." And he says, "Shanae, Daddy wants you to be a good young lady and do what your mother asks of you. I love you, and I hope to see you again real soon. Be good, all right?"
To learn more about the fight to free DeForest Johnson, sign up for updates and learn how you can help. Visit the website created by Greater Birmingham Ministries for DeForest. It's DeForestJohnson.com. And a special thanks to the family of DeForest Johnson, who have generously shared so much for this series. Ear Witness is a production of Lava for Good Podcasts in association with Signal Company No. 1. Executive producers are Jason Flom, Jeff Kempler, Kevin Wardis, and me, Beth Shelburne. The investigative reporting for this series was done by me and Mara McNamara. Producers are Mara McNamara, Hannah Beal, and Jackie Pauly. Kara Kornhaber is our senior producer. Britt Spangler is our sound designer. Additional story editing from Marie Sutton. Fact check help from Catherine Newhan. And special thanks to DeForest Johnson's legal defense team. You can follow the show on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and Twitter at Lava for Good. To see behind-the-scenes content from our investigation, visit lavaforgood.com/earwitness.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. And every week we take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who are they? What made them so notorious? How did the internet or the algorithm choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, guys. Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.